purpose had been to infiltrate the defenses of a nation so that it could, at best, be conquered, at worst, be destroyed. An easy thing to envision when the enemy had been nothing more to her than masked demons using their might to keep her people low. But now they had faces, and names, and families, all of which were annually attacked by kingdoms and pirates alike. Perhaps the Ithacanians were cruel and merciless, but now Laura found she couldn't fault them for that. They did what they needed to do to survive. And with every piece of information she stored away about them, her guilt swelled, because she knew Ithacana wouldn't survive her. While that knowledge might have once brought her satisfaction, now it was nothing but an inescapable fact that seemed destined to plague her every waking moment with self-loathing. Her actions on Ayla Island had accomplished what she'd feared impossible, earning Arryn's trust. And not just his trust, but that of all the soldiers who'd fought in the battle. Their expressions in her presence had gone from distrustful to respectful, and as one, they'd stopped questioning her right to go where she pleased, a right she'd instantly abused. No one had questioned her when she'd stepped away from the healers and the injured after the battle. No one had stopped her or followed her when she'd walked to the base of the bridge pier, where she'd found the nearly invisible entrance, which she marked with a few carefully placed stones that would mean nothing to the Ithacanians and everything to the Maradrenian soldiers when they took Ayla Island. Inside the pier, she'd also hidden three of the horns she'd stolen off corpses on the beach, ready to be used to misdirect Ithacanian reinforcements when the time was right. Something that Arryn had practically explained to her how to do in his attempts to coax her away from the injured and into the boat, which he'd only done because he believed she was coming to love them the way he did. "Do not falter," she silently chanted, eyes fixed on the sky as she floated her still aching body in the hot spring. "Do not fail." Biting at a hangnail on her thumb, Laura considered what she'd learned. Considered whether it was enough for Maradrina to take Ithacana, enough to conquer the unconquerable, and enough to give Maradrina the bridge that would be its salvation. It was enough. All that was left was to get the details of her invasion plan to Saren and her father. Then for her to fake her death and escape Midwatch and Ithacana, and hopefully her father's inevitable assassins. Where she'd go, she didn't know. To Herondale, perhaps. Maybe once the dust had settled, she'd try to find her sisters. Make a life for herself. Though try as she might, she couldn't envision what a life beyond Ithacana might look like. A life without him. Laura's eyes stung, and in a flurry of motion, she climbed out of the spring, reaching for the towel sitting on the rock. Over a week had passed since the attack on Ayla, and yet she hadn't taken one step further to putting her plan into motion. She told herself it was because the muscles she'd torn in her shoulder during the battle needed time to heal before she'd be strong enough to make her escape. But her heart told her that she was delaying for other reasons. Reasons that put her whole mission in jeopardy. But tonight was the night. Arryn had sent word from the barracks via Eli that there was going to be a storm this evening, and that he planned to dine with her. And if he was with her, that meant Taryn, who still insisted on sleeping outside her door, would take a break from her bodyguard duties. A double dose of a sleeping narcotic in Arryn's wine after dinner, and then she'd have the whole night in his bedchamber to work with no fear of interruptions. Already clouds were rolling in, the wind blowing. For even in the calm season, the tempest seas were not without teeth. Laura worked methodically on her appearance, drying her hair, then using a hot iron to create coils that hung down her back. She darkened her eyes with coal and powders until they smoldered, and stained her lips a pale pink. She chose a dress she hadn't worn before, dark purple, the silk scandalously sheer, her body revealed beneath whenever she passed in front of a light. On her ears, she wore black diamonds, and on her wrist, the clever bracelet that concealed the vials of narcotics. Stepping out into the hallway, she made her way down to the dining room, her sandals feeling strange after so many weeks of wearing heavy boots. The room was lit with candles, the shutters on the large windows open, despite the risk the wind posed to the expense of glass, and a soaking wet Eli, stood in close conversation with Taryn, whom Laura was surprised to find still in the house. They both turned to look at her, expressions grim, and Laura's heart skipped. "Where is he?" "They went on patrol late morning." Taryn scrubbed a hand along the shaved sides of her head. "No one has seen or heard from them since." "Is that normal?" Laura couldn't control the shake in her voice. "It's not abnormal for Arin to decide there's somewhere he needs to be other than Midwatch." Then her eyes gave Laura a once-over. "But I don't think that's the case tonight." "So where is he?" "Could have been trouble with one of the boats, or maybe they decided to wait out the storm, or..." Horns sounded, and Laura no longer needed Taryn to tell her what they meant. Raiders. "I'm going down to the barracks." Running to her rooms, Laura replaced her sandals with boots and pulled a cloak over her dress. Outside, the rain was falling steadily, but the wind wasn't high enough to cause the Ithaconians any trouble on the water. Taryn at her arm, and the rest of her bodyguard before and behind her, Laura hurried down the dark path toward the barracks, where the tension was higher than she'd ever seen it. "I'll find out what they know." Taryn left Laura with the other two guards, who followed her as she skirted the cove, climbed the carved stone steps to the clifftops, where she could see the sea. Several soldiers knelt behind the boulders they used for cover, spyglasses in hand. "Anything?" But they only shook their heads. What if he didn't come back? It would throw her plan to shit. Without Arin to write a letter to her father, she had no way to get a detailed message past Anna and her code breakers at Southwatch. Her only option would be to fake her death and escape, then send the information to her father from outside of Ithaconna. But then he and Saren would know she was alive, and that meant a lifetime of assassins chasing at her heels. Yet as she crouched on the ground to watch the blackness of the ocean, it wasn't solutions to her dilemma that filled her thoughts. It was fear. She'd seen so many Ithaconians die in combat, in so many different ways, run through or gutted, crushed or strangled, beaten or drowned. Their corpses danced through her thoughts, all of them now wearing Auron's face. "They haven't sent any word," Taryn had appeared at Laura's elbow. "But that doesn't necessarily mean anything other than that they don't want to announce their presence to the enemy." Or they were all dead, Laura thought, her chest tightening painfully. Taryn handed her a folded packet of papers. "This came for you." Holding the paper next to one of the jars of algae, Laura scanned the contents. Saren, pretending to be her father, discussed his disappointment in her second eldest brother, Carys, who was demanding to attend university in Herondale, rather than take command of Maradrenian forces like her eldest brother. "He wishes to study philosophy, as though there is time to sit around contemplating the meaning of life when our enemies continue to bite at our flanks." Some of the soldiers stirred, pulling her attention from the letter, and it was some moments before she could refocus. Marilyn's code felt elusive, Laura's eyes continually dragging out to sea. But eventually her mind pulled Saren's message from the drivel. "Velkata has blocked our access to Southwatch. Famine on the rise." A wave of nausea passed over Laura, and she shoved the pages into her pocket. With its shipbreakers, Southwatch was capable of running Velkata off, but she could understand their reluctance to antagonize the other nation. Understood what it would cost them for Velkata to join the ranks of kingdoms raiding Ithaconna. But it was her people who paid the price. They sat in the rain for hours, but no horns sounded. No boats appeared below, requesting access to the cove. Nothing even moved in the darkness. Eventually, Taryn shifted next to her. "You should go back to the house, Laura. There's no telling when they'll return, and you'll catch chill sitting in this cold rain." She should go. She knew she should. But the idea of having to wait for one of them to bring her news? "I can't." Her tongue felt thick. "The barracks, then?" Reluctantly, Laura nodded, but every few paces up the trail, she cast a backward glance toward the sea, the roar of it beckoning, drawing her back. "This is Arin's bunk," Taryn said, once they were in the confines of the stone building. "He won't mind if you sleep here." Shutting the door to the tiny room, Laura set her lamp on the rough wooden table next to the narrow bed, then sat, the mattress rock hard and the blanket rough compared to her soft sheets at the house. It reminded her of the cot she'd shared with him at the safe house, how she'd fallen asleep in his arms, listening to the beat of his heart. She pulled off her cloak and curled on her side, her head resting on the pillow. It smelled like him. Squeezing her eyes shut, Laura drew upon every lesson her master of meditation had ever taught her, measuring her breath and clearing her mind. But sleep would not come. So she sat, the blanket wrapped around her legs. There was nothing in the room to distract her, no books or puzzles, not even a deck of cards. The sparse quarters of a soldier, not a king. Or at least, not of the sort of king she'd believed existed. The quarters of a leader who did not hold himself above his people, who wore their hardships like his own, because they were his own. Please be alive. The door swung open and Laura jerked around to find Taryn standing in the doorway. They're back. She followed the other woman in a run down to the cove, her chest tight with fear. It was fear for herself, her mind screamed, fear for her mission, fear for the fate of her people. But her heart told her otherwise. The sand of the beach shifted beneath her feet, and Laura squinted into the darkness, trying to see. A faint voice called out, then the chain rattled, clearing the entrance to the cove. More splashing, waves thudding against hulls and paddles carving through the water. But above all that, Laura picked out groans of pain. Her heart skipped. Please let him be alive. The cove turned into a flurry of activity, boats full of bloodied men and women drifting in, those on shore tying them off and helping the injured onto land. Her eyes skipped over their shadowed faces, searching, searching.
Will you goddamned hurry it up?
Jor's voice. Laura wove through the efficient traffic trying to find the soldier. Finally, she spotted both him and Leah crouched in the bottom of a boat, a slumped figure between them. Laura's feet abruptly rooted on the spot.
Arryn?
The pair reached down and relief flooded her veins as Arryn batted their hands away.
Get off of me. I could damn well get out myself.
He stood and the boat wobbled, both Jor and Leah easily catching their balance, but Arryn nearly going over the side.
Enough of your pride, boy.
Jor and Leah dragged their king onto land. Laura couldn't see what was wrong with him in the dark, the lanterns casting shadows that appeared like bloodstains. Only they shifted and moved. Then Arryn turned, and the lantern behind him revealed the outline of an arrow embedded in his upper arm. Get out of my way. She shoved two soldiers to the side and ran toward Arryn.
What the hell are you doing down here?
Arryn pushed Jor away, even as he stumbled. Laura lurched forward and caught his weight, the hot tang of blood filling her nose.
I can walk on my own.
Clearly. Laura's body quivered with the effort of holding him upright as they navigated the sloped beach to the tree line, the path leading to the barracks dimly lit with jars of algae. Dragging Arryn into the barracks, she eased him down on a bench. Throwing aside her sodden cloak, she pulled one of her knives and cut away his tunic, dropping the ruined garment on the floor. Then she knelt next to him, her eyes taking in the injury. The arrowhead was buried deep in the muscle of his upper arm, the shaft having been broken in half by someone at some point, the wood stained dark with blood.
Goddamned Omeridians!
Jor's voice seemed distant to Laura, every part of her focused on Arryn's breath against her neck, hot and ragged. Lifting her face, she met his pain-hazed gaze. We can't pull it out. We have to push it all the way through.
Every moment with you is such a delight.
A faint spark returned to Arryn's eyes.
Sorry I missed dinner.
You should be. She struggled to keep her voice even. It smelled very good.
Missing the food isn't the part I'm sorry about.
He lifted his uninjured arm, fingers brushing against the large diamond, still adorning her ear, sending a tremble racing through her. Brace yourself on me. She pushed his hand away before her composure was totally shot. The last thing we need is you squirming and making the injury worse. Arryn huffed out a pained laugh, but took hold of her waist with the hand of his uninjured arm, his fingers digging into the muscles of her back.
This will hurt, Jor warned, taking a firm grip on the arrow.
Swearing, Arryn dropped his head against Lara's shoulder, and she pulled him against her, knowing she wasn't strong enough to keep him steady if he struggled.
Relax, Jor said. You're being a baby.
Lara murmured into Arryn's ear.
Breathe.
His shoulders trembled as he inhaled and exhaled, and she knew his attention was on her. His fingers flexed, then slid from her waist to her hip.
Breathe,
she repeated, her lips grazing the lobe of his ear.
Breathe.
As she said the word the third time, she met Jor's gaze. He pushed. Arryn screamed into her shoulder, shoving against her so hard that Lara almost went over backward, her boots skidding against the barracks floor. Blood splattered her face, but she held on, refusing to let go of him.
Got it,
Jor said. And a second later, Laura's knees buckled and she fell back, Arryn landing on top of her. For a heartbeat, neither of them moved. Arryn's breathing labored in her ear, his body pressed against hers. She held him, clung to him. An irrational desire to hunt down and destroy those who'd done this consuming all other thought. Then Jor and Leah were hauling him off her. Scrambling upright, Lara wiped the blood off her face, her heart hammering as Jor examined the injury.
You'll mend.
He moved aside as one of Nana's students arrived. All around were bloodied soldiers. Some gritted their teeth against the pain. Some screamed as their comrades tried to staunch horrific wounds. Some laid still. Every one of them injured in defense of their home. Laura's eyes fell on Taryn. Tears dribbling down the woman's face as she pressed her hands against a young man's stomach, trying to hold his guts inside.
Don't you die on me.
Her whispered voice somehow cut through the din.
Don't you dare die.
But as Lara watched, the young man's chest went still. How many more hearts would still when her father made his move? They are your enemy, she chanted. Your enemy, your enemy. But the words were profoundly hollow in her mind. Lara took one step back, then two, three, until she was out of the barracks and on the empty path.
Lara!
She turned. Arryn stood a dozen paces behind her on the path, the bandage on his arm half falling off as though he'd pushed away the healer working on him before she could finish.
Wait.
She couldn't. She shouldn't, not when every bit of resolve she possessed was crumbling to the ground around her. Yet her feet remained fixed to the earth as Arryn slowly made his way toward her, blood running down his arm and dripping from his fingertips.
I'm sorry.
His voice was shaky.
I'm sorry that all you've seen since you've been here is violence.
All she had ever known was violence. It was nothing to her, and everything.
I wish it was different. I wish it wasn't like this.
He swayed, dropping to his knees, and Lara didn't realize she'd also knelt until the mud soaked through her dress. Didn't realize she'd reached out to steady him until the hand of his uninjured arm caught hold of her hip for balance. A dance where she led and he followed.
Eyes just like your damnable father. That's what I thought when I first saw you. We call it Maradrenian bastard blue.
He must have felt her flinch because his grip on her hip tightened, drawing her closer. She didn't fight him.
But I was wrong. Different, they're deeper, like the color of the sea around Arinol.
Arinol? She'd seen that name before, written on one of the pages in his desk. Heard it when he'd berated Commander Astor on the beach at Ayla Island. Revealing it was a slip on his part, she was sure of it. But she couldn't bring herself to care as his hand slid to the small of her back. It took all the willpower she had in her possession to keep from slipping her arms around his neck, to keep from leaning in to kiss those blasted perfect lips of his, never mind the blood and gore. Lara withdrew her hand from his shoulder, but he caught it with his own. Folding her fingers into a fist, he kissed her knuckles, eyes burning into hers.
Don't go.
Everything was burning. Laura's heart beat frantically, her breathing unsteady, her skin so sensitive that the press of her clothes almost hurt. Stop! The warning shrieked inside her head. You're losing control! She tuned the voice out, shoved it away. Auron's thumb brushed the inside of her wrist, her knuckles still pressed to his lips, and it sent rivers of sensation running over her skin, the desire to have his hands elsewhere making her legs weak. She swayed, and he pulled her against him, both of them unsteady.
You need to go back to the healers. You need to let them stitch that up before you bleed to death.
I'll be fine.
He lowered his head even as she lifted hers, sharing the same air, the same breath, the rapid rise and fall of his chest belying his words. He was not fine. The thought of it filled her with terror. Terror that turned instantly to rage. Why did she care what happened to him beyond the success of her mission? Why did she care whether he lived or died? This was the man who willfully made decisions that caused great harm to the people of her homeland. Perhaps he did so for the sake of his own people, but that did not excuse the complete lack of empathy and guilt he felt in the doing. He was her enemy, and she needed to get free of him before she made a mistake. Then his lips brushed softly against hers, and it undid her entirely. Her fingers tangled in her hair, and she wanted more, more of this, and more of him. But instead of giving it to her, he pulled back.
I need you to help me make this stop. I'm tired of fighting against the world, when what I want is to fight to make Ithacon a part of it.
And it was as though reality slapped her across the face. Laura pulled away from him. It's never going to stop, Auron. Her voice was barren, dead, which was strange because inside her head was a chaos of emotion. You have what everyone wants, and they're never going to stop trying to take it. This is Ithacana, and it's all it ever will be. Live with it.
This isn't living, Laura.
He coughed, then winced, pressing his hand against the wound.
And I intend to keep fighting for a better future, even if it kills me.
Irrational fury surged through her veins at his words. Then you might as well lay down and die. She needed to be away from this situation because it was tearing her apart. Rising in a flurry of motion, Laura turned and ran up the dark path, slipping on the mud and roots to the house. She waited in her rooms until the halls were silent, until there was no chance of anyone disturbing her, then crept through the dark hallways and picked the lock to Auron's room. Vitek sat on the bed, but he only slunk outside, ignoring her as he passed. Closing the door behind her, Laura brightened her lamp and went to Auron's desk. Sitting, she extracted the jar of invisible ink Saren had given her, then drew the stationery box of heavy official parchment next to her left hand, flipping open the lid. Taking the top page, she turned it over so the embossed shape of the bridge was face down, then she dipped the pen into the ink and began to write in tiny script, the liquid drying invisible as she detailed everything she'd learned about Ithacana and a strategy for taking and breaking the Bridge Kingdom. Her hand shook as she reached the bottom, but she only set aside the paper to dry and retrieved another, repeating her message. Then another, and another, until all 26 pages in the box contained identical damning words. It took all her strength not to tear them to pieces as she set everything back and retreated to her own room. Exhaustion weighing her limbs, she buried her face in the pillows of her bed, tears soaking the feathers within. It's the only way, she told herself. It's the only way to save Mar-a-Drina, even if it meant damning herself. War tides ended with a typhoon that came in fast and violent, the seas so rough that not even the Ithacanians would venture out on them. Even the bridge was likely empty, Eli told her, the storm too intense for merchant ships to brave the short crossing to North and South Watch Islands. Midwatch felt profoundly isolated as a result, cut off entirely from the world, and made worse by the fact that Laura was stuck in the house alone with the servants. Though the fighting was over, Arryn was avoiding her. He spent all his days with his soldiers and his nights on the narrow cot in the barracks, not once coming up the path to the Midwatch house. Even so, she checked the number of pages of stationery in his room nightly, but every last page of the condemning words remained in Ithacana. As did she. On the morning after the storm broke, Laura decided it was time. Dressing in her Ithacanian clothes, she filled her pockets with jewels and some of her more favored narcotics, ate as much as she could stuff in her stomach, then told Eli she was going to go outside for some fresh air. Attempting the seas during a storm would see her dead in truth, so she'd waited for clear skies before enacting her plan to fake her death, knowing that honor would drive Arryn to send a formal letter informing Laura's father of her demise. That Saren, ever watchful, would check the page and discover what she'd written. Then she could only hope and pray that when she hadn't shown up after a time in Ventzia, her father and Saren would believe she was dead in truth, that no assassins would come searching for her in Herondale, which was where she planned to go, that she could live her life knowing that she'd given her people a chance for a better future, at the cost of the futures of everyone living in Ithacana. With the storms to watch over the island, Taryn and the rest had been given respite from guard duty, and there was no one to evade as she followed a trail to the cliffs overlooking the sea, cutting down the northern side until she came to the spot she'd selected long ago. It was a high spot, the water 40 feet below, but what had drawn her to it was the series of flat rocks jutting out of surf. They were suitable for her to lower her little canoe onto with ropes, and equally suitable for staging what would appear an accidental fall and a tragic death. From there, she intended to hop from island to island, using safe houses as she found them, slowly making her way to Herondale during the breaks in the storm. It was a plan fraught with peril, yet it wasn't fear that sat heavy in her gut as she stared down at the rocks.
"Don't fall."
Startled, Laura lost her balance, and Arryn reached out and caught hold of her arm, hauling her away from the edge.
"Come with me. You have duties to attend to."
"What duties?"
"A queen's duties."
She dug in her heels, leaving twin trails in the mud, until he stopped and gave her a look of disgust.
"That's not a duty, Laura. Supervising the return of the Midwatch evacuees is. So either start walking or I'm going to drag you down to the water and toss you in a boat."
"I'll walk." She was furious that her plan was being disrupted, but also at the small kernel of relief that she felt, knowing she'd likely have to wait for another storm to pass before leaving Ithacana. Ensconced in her usual spot in the boat, she waited until they were out of the cove before asking, "Where are we going?"
"Xerath."
Arryn hunched over, his back to her.
"Just a charming day on the water,"
Jor said from behind her as he put up the sail. After that, no one said anything more. The cove at Xerath Island was dominated by two of the large twin-hulled vessels she'd seen during the evacuation, but they were already empty of civilians and supplies, their crews readying to depart. To depart to Arryn'all, she mused, watching them. Though where exactly that was remained a mystery to her despite all her weeks of spying. Her skin prickled as she followed Arryn up the path through the gap in the rock where she'd killed all those soldiers, the group continuing on until they reached the village. It was an entirely different sight than the last time they'd been here. Instead of blood and bodies, dead-eyed children and weeping parents, it was bustling with industry. Women opening up the shuttered windows and doors to their homes to air them out, and children running wild between them. There was a flood of greetings and well-wishes, proud introductions of new babies to their rulers, and children trailing in their wake, desperate for a moment of attention. Arryn's tactic was obvious, trying to pull on her heartstrings by pushing chubby babies into her arms or by giving her sweets to hand out to the children. And it was effective. She wanted to drop to the ground and weep because their world was going to be torn asunder. But it was between them and the Maredhrinians. Maredhrinia's starving people needed the bridge, needed the revenues, needed the goods that came through it. So she would sacrifice these people for her own, and then pray that guilt and grief didn't kill her. Laura would have done anything to have her sisters here with her to share the burden, because they would understand. They were the only people who would understand. But she was alone. And every minute that passed felt like she was closer to the breaking point of what she could endure. Only when they returned to the boats did she feel like she could breathe again, sitting with her face in her hands as they sailed back to midwatch.
Looks like the Guardians have had some visitors, Jor said, breaking the silence.
Laura lifted her head, eyes landing on a small island with gentle white beaches that faded into rock and greenery. Looming above it was the bridge, its length resting on a pier centered on the island. It wasn't that the island itself was unique, only that it appeared remarkably easy to access relative to the others the builders had used as piers. Because they had no choice, she determined, eyeing the distance. The largest bridge span she'd seen was 100 yards between piers, and to bypass this island would have required a longer stretch than was possible. Her eyes then landed on the 3 human-shaped forms, lying halfway up the beach, bloated and rotting in the sun. What is this place?
Snake Island.
She thought of the countless serpents she'd seen since arriving. A name that describes most of Ithacana.
This one in particular.
Arin motioned for Jor to lower the sails, allowing the boat to drift over the shallow bottom toward the beach.
Look.
She stared, seeing shifting movement beneath the ledge of rock overhanging the beach, but unable to make out details. Arin stood up in the boat next to her, a still-moving fish that had been caught earlier in one hand, waiting as the waves washed them gently to shore. When they were about 12 feet out, Jor struck a paddle in the water, bracing the boat from moving further. Arin threw the fish. It landed about midway up the beach, and Laura watched in horror as dozens upon dozens of snakes shot out of the overhang, flying toward the fish with their jaws open. They were big, the average of them longer than Arin was tall, and some much larger than that. The front runner snapped its jaws around the fish as the others piled on top of one another, struggling and snapping until the fish disappeared down a gullet. The snake's neck distended to contain its prize.
Good God, Laura pressed her hand against her mouth.
One of them gets its teeth into you, you'll find yourself paralyzed within minutes. Then it's a matter of time before one of the big ones comes along to finish the job.
Big ones? The island became impossibly more forbidding as Laura searched for signs of said snakes. She caught sight of a stone path leading up to the base of the pier. It was overgrown, but compared to all the other piers, it seemed almost welcoming.
Please don't tell me you use this as a route into the bridge.
Arin shook his head.
Red herring. Does its job well, it's so inviting.
Too inviting, Jor added. How many of ours have those blasted serpents fed upon?
Laura looked up at Arin askance.
It's a game our young people play, though it's forbidden. 2 people bait the snakes away from the path, and the runner must make it to the pier, climb up and out onto the bridge, then drop back into the water. A test of bravery. More like proof of idiocy.
Certainly a good way to get oneself killed. Laura chewed the inside of her cheeks, debating the usefulness of this particular place. It would be easy to anchor ships and ferry men in, if something could be done about the snakes. Laura was so caught up in her thoughts, she didn't notice Arin had stripped down to his trousers until he hopped over the edge of his boat, standing in the hip-deep water.
Hold this for me.
He handed her his bow.
Don't let it get wet.
What do you think you're doing? He cracked his knuckles.
It's been a long time, but I'm sure I can still do it. Get back into the boat, Arin, Jor said. You're not a 14-year-old boy anymore. No, I'm not, which should only be to my advantage. Leah and Taryn, you bait. Do a good job of it unless you want to spend your days watching Anna's ass. You'll do no such thing, Jor ordered the 2 women. Stay put.
Arin twisted round in the water, resting his hands on the boat.
Do I need to remind you who is king here, Jor?
Laura felt her jaw drop. Never in her time in Ithacana had she seen him pull rank. Given orders, yes, but this was different. The two men glared at each other, but Jor threw up his free hand in defeat.
Do as His Majesty orders.
With grim faces, the two women retrieved a pair of fish each, then jumped into the water. They've done this before, Laura thought. They've done this before for him. Laura's heart was pounding in a staccato beat.
Get in the boat. Your arm isn't healed.
It's healed well enough.
This is madness, Auron. What are you trying to prove?
Auron didn't answer, waiting until he stood only a few feet back from the waterline, then standing utterly still, while the two soldiers splashed noisily in opposite directions, drawing the attention of the snakes. The ground beneath the ledge was a twisting mass of bodies, the creatures moving away from the path, watching the women.
This is because of what you said, a voice in her head whispered. You told him to lay down and die.
Auron, get back in the boat. You don't need to do this.
He ignored her.
Tell him you care. Tell him his life matters to you. Say what you need to say to get him back in the boat.
Except she couldn't. Couldn't tell him a lie like that, only to stab him in the back.
But is it a lie?
Auron, I...
Laura's throat strangled the rest of the words. Jor nodded at the guards in the boat, and those carrying bows silently knocked arrows. But somehow Auron sensed what they were doing.
If any one of you shoots one of those arrows, you're done in my guard.
They lowered their bows.
You can't be serious. Auron, get back in the boat, you...
Go.
At his command, the women threw flopping fish onto the beach. Once again, snakes shot out from under the ledge, dozens upon dozens. More than Laura could count. And just as the front runners were about to snap up their prize, Auron broke into a sprint, feet sinking into the deep sand. He made it halfway up the beach when the snakes saw him, several of them rearing up high to regard the intruder before launching themselves his direction. He was fast, but the snakes were faster.
They're coming!
Laura watched in horror as the wicked creatures flew across the sand. Auron was on the path, racing toward the towering pier, sweat gleaming on his bare shoulders. He had 30 yards to go. He wasn't going to make it. The snakes were throwing themselves through the air, their jaws snapping only paces behind him. And they were closing in.
Run!
Laura stood, not even noticing how the boat rocked beneath her. He could not die, not like this. Jor was on his feet, too.
Run, you little shit!
Only a dozen yards. Please, she prayed. Please, please. She and Jor saw it before Auron did. An enormous beast of a snake rounding the base of the pier, drawn by the commotion of its smaller brethren. It saw Auron the same time he saw it, the snake rearing even as the king skidded, caught between death on both sides. Without thinking, Laura lifted Auron's bow and tore an arrow out of the hand of the nearest guard. Knocking the weapon even as she whirled, she let the arrow fly. The black fletching shot through the air, barely missing Auron's shoulder, catching the man-eater square in its open mouth. Auron reacted instantly, leaping over the fallen snake and jumping to catch handholds in the worn rock, jerking his heels out of reach of the lunging snakes just in time. He climbed to the midway point in a matter of seconds, then turned his head to look at the boat, likely to see who'd disobeyed his orders. Laura let the bow slip from her fingers. But it didn't matter. He'd seen. They'd all seen. And now she'd have to deal with the consequences. No one spoke as he climbed, and Laura's heart didn't slow for a moment of it, knowing full well that a fall from that height would kill him. The wound on his arm had broken open and blood was dripping off him as he climbed. But if it bothered him, he didn't show it. Reaching the top of the bridge, Auron loped down the span until he was back over deep water, then without hesitation, dove into its depths. Laura held her breath, searching the sea for any sign of him. But there was nothing. His shoulder was bleeding. What if there were sharks nearby? Jor was moving behind her, kicking off his boots, the boat drifting.
Leah, Taryn, get over here.
Then Auron broke the surface, hauling himself into the boat in one smooth motion.
Water glistened on his tanned skin, muscles rippling as he caught his balance, his soldiers half falling out to clear a path as he stepped toward her.
What the hell was that?
Laura stood her ground, not caring that he loomed over her.
Me saving your childish ass, that's what it was. I didn't need saving. Bullshit.
Auron glared at Jor once before turning back to Laura.
You never said you could use a bow. Would have been a useful thing for you to mention in recent months.
You never asked. Rising on her toes, she glared at him until he took a step back, the boat rocking as it drifted closer to shore.
And if you ever scare me like that again, don't think I won't hesitate to use one on you. And here I thought you didn't care.
I don't. You can walk back onto that beach and bed down with one of those snakes for all the difference it makes to me.
Is that so?
And quick as the serpents on the island, he picked her up and tossed her into the water. Laura landed on her ass on the sandbar, the water only up to her waist, but her clothing soaked.
Asshole!
She clambered to her feet, the waves lapping at her knees.
Says the woman who's been nothing but a thorn in my... Ugh!
He cut off with a yelp as Jor leaned back in the boat and kicked him solidly in the ass, knocking him in. Auron landed on his hands and knees with a splash, nearly knocking Laura over. Regaining his footing faster than she had, Auron shouted,
God damn it, Jor! What the hell was that for?
But the boat was already sailing away.
We'll be back, Jor shouted, once you two work out this little marital spat.
Then the vessel rounded the pier, and they were out of sight. Unleashing a string of blistering curses, Auron smacked his hand against the surface of the water. Laura hardly noticed. Instead, she watched the snakes making their way down the sand, stopping at the waterline. Several of them reared, swaying back and forth as they watched the two of them. And behind her, open ocean. Even if she could swim, Laura damn well knew what lurked within those waters. She was trapped. The sun beat down on her head, and her brow prickled as beads of sweat formed, mixing with the seawater drenching her hair. Her growing panic must have been written all over her face, because Auron said,
The snakes won't come out here. They can swim, but they don't like to. Jor will come back. He's just being an asshole. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Easy for you to say. Laura's teeth clattered together as though she were cold, but she wasn't. You can swim away if you want to.
It's tempting.
I'm not surprised, given how little worth you place on Maradrenian lives. The words had crept out, but perhaps it was time they did. Perhaps it was time that she called him out for Ithacana's villainy. Auron stared at her, jaw open.
Perhaps you might explain to me just what I have done to elicit a comment like that from you. I've done nothing but treat you with courtesy, and the same goes for your countrymen.
Nothing? Laura knew she was allowing her temper to get the better of her, but anger tasted better than fear. You think allowing my people to starve because it's good for your coffers is nothing?
Silence. You think Ithacana is responsible for Maradrina's troubles?
His voice was incredulous.
We're goddamn allies.
Ah, yes, allies. Which is why everyone knows the majority of the food sold at Southwatch goes to Valcata.
Because they buy it. He threw up his hands. Southwatch is a free market. Whoever offers the most for the goods gets them. No bias, no favoritism. That's how it works. Ithacana is neutral.
How easily you wash your hands of all culpability. She was growing furious that he'd spent the day trying to elicit her sympathy for his people and then turned a blind eye on hers. And how can you claim an alliance in one breath and neutrality in the next?
Auron swore, shaking his head. I can't. I can't anymore.
He pressed a thumb into his temple.
Why do you think Amarid has been breathing down our necks? It's because they're angry about the concessions we gave to Maradrina, and which we will give Herondale if Anna ever decides to go marry their prince.
And what impact have your so-called concessions made? Maradrina is starving, caught between Ithacana and the Red Desert.
and I've yet to see you show the slightest bit of empathy.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
No? I heard you the day I was brought here, heard you say the concessions you gave to my father were not what you wanted, and that Moradrina would starve before it ever saw the benefit of this treaty. He stared at her, face tight with fury.
You're right. I did say that, but if you and the rest of your people want to cast blame for Moradrina's famine, it's best you look to your father.
Lara opened her mouth to retort, but nothing came out.
Have you read the treaty?
He asked. Of course I have. If Moradrina kept the peace with Ithacana for 15 years, you'd marry a princess of the realm and offer significant concessions to tariffs and tolls on the bridge for as long as the peace between our kingdoms held.
That's the sum of it. And when it came to negotiate those concessions, I offered to eliminate all costs associated with a singular imported good, believing that I could force your father toward a choice that would culture peace. Cattle, wheat, corn. But do you know what he demanded? Herendelian steel.
Her chest tightened.
You're lying. Everything my father has done is for the good of our people.
Everything your father does is for the good of his coffers and for his pride.
Auron shook his head.
Our taxes on steel and weapons have always been prohibitively exorbitant, because the trafficking of weapons has political ramifications we'd prefer to avoid. Never mind that those weapons were often used, in turn, against us.
She couldn't breathe.
Moradrina has no ore mines, which means the steel for its weapons must be sourced elsewhere, and because your father won't give up his endless war with Valcata, he has been forced to import his weapons at great cost by ship. Until now.
The sun was too bright. Everything a blur.
I'll continue, since it seems your education in the desert had some gaps.
Auron's hazel eyes glinted with anger. They were the only things she could seem to focus on.
War costs money. Believe me, I know. But your father doesn't have the bridge, so he pays for it with heavy taxes that have crippled Moradrina's economy. So even when its merchants dock at Southwatch's open market, they are unable to bid competitively. And so they set sail with what no one else will buy.
Diseased meat. Rotten grain. Lara closed her eyes. If he was telling the truth, it meant that everything that had been fueling her desire to capture the bridge had been false. And all that would remain to justify the fall of Ithacana was the very thing she'd rallied against her entire life.
Greed. I'm not the one who has been lying to you. Not that I expect you to believe me.
Jor and the others chose that moment to circle back around, and the expression on Auron's face was enough to wipe the amusement off the older man's. The boat drew closer, and Auron grabbed the edge, hauling himself in. Once Lara did the same, Auron ordered.
Put up the other sail.
Jor winced.
That eager to get home? We aren't going home. Oh, where to?
Auron cast a glance at the darkening skies in the east, then turned back around. But it wasn't Jor his eyes went to. Laura's stomach flipped as Auron stared her down, challenged her.
We're going to pay a visit to Moradrina.
That he was willing to risk stepping into enemy territory. That he was willing to bring her, who knew so many of Ithacana's secrets, into that territory should have convinced Lara that Auron's words were true. That her father, Saren, and all her masters at the compound were liars. But it didn't. Stories of Ithacana's villainy had been burned into Lara's soul, whispered in her ears all her life, chanted like a mantra through hours, days, years of grueling training that had nearly broken her, that had broken many of her half-sisters, sending them one way or another to their deaths. Take the bridge and you will be the savior of Moradrina. To believe Auron would mean changing that chant to something very different. Take the bridge and you will be the destroyer of a nation.
Take the bridge, and you will prove yourself your father's pawn.
For that reason, she, like a coward, immediately argued against going.
We are in the middle of storm season.
Lara pointed at the darkness in the east.
What sort of madman takes to the seas to prove a point?
This sort of madman.
Auron pulled the line Leah passed him tight.
Besides, the skies are clear in the direction we're going. And if the storm does catch us, we are rumored to be very adept sailors.
We are in a canoe.
Lara despised the shrillness in her voice.
I fail to see how your skill will come into play in the middle of a typhoon.
Auron laughed, sitting down on one of the benches.
We're hardly going to sail into the capital of Maradrina in an Ithaconian vessel.
How then? She demanded. The bridge?
Jor snorted and gave Auron a meaningful look.
Better to bypass Southwatch, isn't it, Majesty?
Auron ignored him, putting his heels up and leaning back against a pack.
You'll see soon enough.
Soon enough, she was clinging to the edge of the vessel as it skipped across the waves, keeled over so far she was certain a strong gust of wind would capsize them, drowning them in the open sea.
Lara reminded herself to pay attention to where they were going.
This is how they infiltrate your homeland, how they spy.
Yet as the bridge and its mist faded into the distance, and more islands rose up ahead, all she cared to learn was the depths of Saren and her father's deception. The Ithaconians dropped one of the sails, the boat easing from its terrifying angle to settle on the sea. And Lara took stock of where Auron had taken her. Columns of rock, crusted with green, rose out of blue seas so clear the bottom seemed only an arm's depth away. Birds filled the air in enormous flocks, some diving into the water only to emerge with a fish clutched in their beaks, which they gulped down before one of their fellows could steal it away. Some of the larger islands had white beaches that beckoned invitingly, and nowhere, nowhere, was there any sign of the defenses that turned the waters around Ithacana's bridge red with enemy blood. Lara rose onto her knees to look up as they passed between two towers of limestone.
Do people live here?
As if to answer her question, when they rounded another island, several fishing boats appeared. The men and women aboard them stopping what they were doing to lift their hands in greeting, many of them calling out to Auron by name.
Some live here,
he responded slowly, as though the admission cost him something.
But it's dangerous. If they are attacked, we can't come to their aid until it's too late to matter.
Are they attacked often?
Not since the treaty was signed, which is why more people have settled their families here.
Do they leave during war tides?
His jaw tightened. No.
Lara turned away from the fishing boats to look up at him, a sickening feeling filling her guts. What were the chances that Saren and her father didn't know these people were here? And what were the chances Auron wouldn't do everything in his power to help them if they were attacked? Even if it meant weakening the bridge's defenses. They meandered through the islands in silence before sailing beneath a natural stone arch into a hidden cove that dwarfed the one at Midwatch, where, to Laura's surprise, several large ships were anchored.
They're mostly naval vessels that we've captured. We've refit several to pass as merchant ships. This one's mine.
Auron pointed at a mid-sized vessel painted with blue and gold. Aren't they all yours? Lara accepted Jor's arm for balance before taking hold of the rope ladder dangling off the side of the ship.
They all belong to King Auron of Ithacana. But this one is under the command of Captain John, merchant of Herondale. Now come on. That storm's going to chase us into Vencia if we delay much longer.
The hold, as it turned out, was full of the very product that Ithacana had been trying to keep from Maradrina. Steel.
Can't keep a hold full of cattle sitting around.
Auron said.
Plus, it's the only commodity worth the risk of a storm season crossing. Or at least it was.
As they retreated back on deck and into the captain's quarters, Lara broke off a tiny piece of the root Nana had given her, then chewed on it vigorously, hoping it would quell the nausea inflicted by more than just seasickness. Opening a chest, Auron rifled around and extracted a set of clothes and a floppy cap, which he tossed her way.
Disguises. If you pretend to be a boy, you'll have more liberty once we arrive in the city.
Scowling at him, Lara took the clothes and waited for him to turn his back before shedding her Ithaconian garments. After a bit of thought, she wrapped a scarf tightly around her chest, binding her breasts as well as she could, then donned the baggy shirt and voluminous trousers apparently favored by sailors from Herondale. She twisted her long braid into a coil on top of her head, securing it tightly, then tugged the cap over the whole affair and turned around. Orin was already dressed in his Herondale attire, a similar floppy hat perched on his head. He frowned.
You still look like a woman.
Shocking, she crossed her arms. He turned in a circle, then walked to a corner and rubbed a hand across the floor.
This ship hasn't gone anywhere for over a year, and I don't think anyone's been in to clean.
Retreating across the room, he reached for her. Lara recoiled in alarm.
What are you doing?
Finishing your disguise.
Holding the back of her head, he rubbed a hand that smelled like dirt and mouse shit across her face, ignoring her protests. Stepping back, Orin eyed her up and down.
Slouch a bit. And keep that frown on your face. It suits that of a 13-year-old boy forced into the service of his roguish yet charming older cousin.
Lara lifted her hand in a gesture that was universally insulting. Orin laughed, then shouted out the door.
All hands on deck! We set sail for Moradrina.
With practiced efficiency, the soldiers turned Herondalean sailors were readying the ship, Jor in conversation with a dozen Ithaconians she didn't recognize, but who must have been on the island.
What's the story, Captain?
Jor called out as Orin and Lara came on deck.
We saw a break in the storms and risked the crossing for a quick profit. Last chance to make a pretty penny while steel prices are high.
Everyone nodded in agreement, and it dawned on Lara that they'd done this before. That the most sought-after man in Ithacana had waltzed beneath her father's nose with no one, not even Saren, so much the wiser.
Arryn took hold of the wheel at the helm, shouting orders. The anchor was raised, sails dropped into place, and then the ship was drifting out of the cove.
Do you go to Moradrina often?
Arryn shook his head.
Not anymore. Before my coronation, I spent a great deal of time in other kingdoms, furthering my education on trade economics. Is that what you were doing?
Jor said as he walked by.
And here I thought all those ventures out of Ithacana were to give you an opportunity to gamble, chase skirts, and piss away money on cheap booze. That too.
Arryn had the decency to look embarrassed.
Regardless, all of it ended when I was crowned. But for Lara, I'm going to make an exception.
She rested her elbows on the rail.
How long will it take us to get there?
Either ahead of the storm, he grinned, or not at all.
This is unnecessary.
She was more worried about what she'd find when they arrived than whether he'd get her there alive.
That's my call to make. Now why don't you go find something useful to do?
Because she knew Arryn wouldn't expect her to listen, Lara did just that.
Armed with a bucket, a mop, and a filthy brush, she scrubbed the deck before moving into the captain's quarters, where she pilfered some of the gold she found in the drawer of a desk, pausing in her cleaning only to rid herself of blackened water and haul in fresh. From the corner of her eye, she saw Arryn open his mouth each time she passed, before snapping it shut and glowering at the sea ahead of them. Which was satisfying in and of itself, but more than that, the cleaning gave her uninterrupted time to think. As Lara saw it, she had three options once they made port. The first was that she ran. There was no doubt in her mind that she could escape Arryn and his guard, and with the jewels she had in her pocket, along with the gold she'd already pilfered from the captain's quarters, she'd be able to set up a life for herself, wherever she saw fit. She'd have her freedom, and on the assumption that Arryn would eventually write to her father on the marked paper, she'd have done her duty to her people. The second was that she made her way to her father's palace and used the code Saren had given her to gain admittance, that she'd tell them all that she knew in detail in exchange for her freedom, as had been promised. Though doing so risked her father cutting her throat a heartbeat after she'd given him what he needed. And the third was that everything Orin had told her was true.
that her father had been given the opportunity to improve the lives of the Moradrinian people, but had chosen not to. That her father, not Ithacana, was the oppressor of her homeland. Yet Laura's mind balked, unwilling to accept